This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo Ann. What if you were told that you had zombie cells in your brain and that they have an impact on age-related diseases like Alzheimer's or even cancer? So that's our topic for today's Brainwave series. And neurogeneticist Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar is back on the show with us to help us understand what exactly these cells are doing in our body and whether we should be alarmed about this. And joining her on the show today is pharmacologist Professor Dr. Wong Pui Fong, and both of them are from University of Malaya. Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Yeah, it's good to be in the studio. Thanks, Pui Fong, for joining us.
Hello, thank you for having me.
This is quite an interesting topic because I think when you first suggested it, Dr. Azlina, I saw the word zombie cells and got a bit freaked out. It's like imagining what exactly is happening in our body, in our brain. But I guess maybe we can start, right, Dr. Azlina? What are the different types of, I guess, cells that are found in the brain? And where exactly do the zombie cells fit in?
Yeah, so thanks for that, Sue. And so actually, I mean, I think the more we research on the brain, the more we discover that there's so many things that we don't know about how cells behave in particular. And then if we're then trying to develop, you know, targets or trying to understand how the brain develops, if we don't know enough about all the different types of cells and how they behave, that's going to make our job even more complicated. So what we do know is that the brain is sort of roughly consists of neurons, and neurons are the cells that, you know, I'm sure everyone has seen in the textbook. It's got a cell body with a nice long axon, and it transmits information either through electrical or chemical impulses. Mm-hmm. And then the other 50% are glial cells, and these glial cells have multiple roles. First of all, they were initially thought to be just sort of like, you know, the glue that keeps neurons together. But in fact, we now know that they have a diverse range. So number one, they themselves can transmit information to each other. They support the neurons by giving them some nice little goodies to eat and trophic factors to keep them nice and healthy. And they also have a role to make sure that inflammation in the brain is kept in check. So, and then there are other cells also known as epidermal cells, and those are the ones that line the ventricles that are in our brain. And some studies have shown that you can have stem cells within that lining as well. And I suppose from all those cells, we always thought that we understood their behavior in terms of their typical life cycle. Mm-hmm. But with these zombie cells, it seems like there's a whole different kind of thing happening that we need to understand more about.
So these zombie cells are essentially made up of these cells that are in the brain.
Yes, so they are actually neuronal cells or glial cells, mm-hmm. that used to have used to do their regular function, but because of a number of factors, they then become inactive. And then the term zombie cells, actually, Dr. Wong can tell us a little bit more about how these normal cells sort of then go on to develop a special property where they become inactive. Mm-hmm. But the zombie cells are thought to be sort of cells that remain alive even when they're inactive. So normally we always think that if a cell is inactive, eventually it will be disposed of. But actually within tissues, we have these sort of cells that are just sort of lying dormant for a little while, and they may come alive. So hence, that's why they're called zombies.
Mm. So before we get to that point, Dr. Wong, you know, what exactly happens in a typical cell life cycle? When do they usually die off, if they do? And then later on, we can get into how they become these zombies.
Yeah, so a typical life cycle of a cell involves two main stages. Stage one is what we call interphase, or where the cell grows, copies its DNA, and prepares to divide. And then there's stage two, where the cells divide. It's actually called mitosis. So the chromosomes align, and then they separate into two daughter cells. So the stage one interphase stage is the longest part of the cell cycle, mm-hmm. and consists of three other phases. So number one is G1 phase, where the cell grows and performs its normal function. And then we have the S phase, or synthesis phase, where it copies its DNA and prepare for cell division. And then there's a third phase called G2 phase, mm-hmm. where the cells grow more, mix more protein and cellular components, and then they get ready to divide. So in this cell cycle, there are checkpoints after the G1 and G2 phases. Basically, the purpose is to make sure the DNA is in good condition, no mutation, and the size of the cells is sufficient for the cell to divide. So what happened here is if the cells are not are having damaged DNA or mutations in the DNA, so two things can happen. One, they can be asked to exit the cell cycle mm-hmm. and go through a program called a programmed cell death. That phase where we call it apoptosis. So basically, they're asked to go die. So they don't pass on the mutation to daughter cells. Then there's also a resting stage where you know, the cells they are made to go into this resting stage called G0. Mm-hmm. So there are two types of cells in G0 phase. So the cells can be quiescence or senescence. So quiescence is triggered by, you know, lack of nutrients, you know, and suitable environment for the cells to grow. So you just lay there temporarily, okay? And when the environment improves, the nutrients are enough, they will come up again and go into the cycle and divide, all right? So on the other hand, senescent cells, they are very different. They go into this phase called permanent arrest, mm-hmm. all right? They cannot divide anymore, but they are alive. Mm-hmm. They are alive doing something there. So that's why you see zombie cells here. So some are under quiescence, mm-hmm. so they can become alive again when the conditions is good. And then there's some in senescence phase where I know they're permanently not able to divide, but they're still alive doing something there mm-hmm. in tissue environment.
So these zombie cells are these senescent cells?
Yeah. They will, at some point, they may be, so they're just sitting there being very quiet. But then they have just like, you know, the living dead, right? Mm-hmm. They're in the grave, not really doing anything until at some point Michael Jackson plays the song and then, you know, they start dancing. Yeah, so yeah. They're just waiting to be triggered.
I must say, listening to you, Dr. Wong, I'm getting flashbacks to SPM biology.
SPM is just over. So
yeah, that's right. We should have done this before.
Yes, well, now this is the chance for SPM students to keep learning.
That's
you know,
right.
Learning doesn't stop after SPM. You continue learning. But Dr. Wong, why do some cells die off, you know, during that process, but some of them sort of stop and stay alive, but still live?
Many conditions or stimuli can cause these cells to, you know, stay alive or to go on living or dead, okay? Mm-hmm. So it depends on what kind of stimuli they are subjected to. And these stimuli are the ones that usually cause DNA damage. For example, the exposure to oxidants, gamma irradiation, ultraviolet lights, DNA damaging drugs, and even shortening of the chromosome ends as they divide also can push them to, you know, senescence, right? Mm-hmm. So in some instances when the stress is overwhelming, so the senescent cells, which are actually live at that time, because of the overwhelming stress, they also go into programmed cell death. All right. However, then there are certain senescent cells, they acquire this ability to resist apoptosis or programmed cell death. So they develop mechanism, they become anti-apoptosis, they remain alive.
Yeah. And this happens in all tissues.
All over your body in all sorts of tissues.
They found, I think, senescent cells in almost all organs, right?
Yeah, so the cell fate is dependent on the type and level of stress they are exposed to mm-hmm. and the type of cells and also the environment they are in.
Mm. Yeah. So that means, I guess, at any one point, all of us would have some sort of senescent cells in our body.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, even in the brain, yeah.
Ah, okay, interesting. And would that number of cells, I guess, remain the same as we age? Would that increase, decrease? Do we know?
So, just as Dr. Wong explained, with aging, there will be increasing number of cells that will enter senescence. Mm. So, if you were to look at a newborn brain, for example, compared to an older brain, then theoretically you would see more of these senescent cells in the older brain.
Interesting. So we'll go for a quick break now, and after that we'll come back and find out what exactly is the impact of having these senescent cells in our body. On the show with me today are neurogeneticist Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar and pharmacologist Professor Dr. Wong Pui Fong, both from University Malaya, for our Brainwaves series. Don't go anywhere, we'll be right back on Health and Living BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo, and you're listening to an episode of our Brainwaves series together with neurogeneticist Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, and joining her on the show today is pharmacologist Professor Dr. Wong Pui Fong from University Malaya as well. Now, today we are talking about the presence of zombie cells in our body. Now, that might sound alarming, but we're actually talking about the correct term for it is senescent cells. So before the break, we were talking a bit about how these cells come to be in our body and how they sort of form as you age as well. Now, Dr. Wong, what happens when we have these cells in our body? You know, I understand that studies have shown that they can have both a positive and a negative impact. Tell me more about that.
Okay, so senescent cells, they continue to function, but they assume a different behavior, whereby they produce substances that can have effects on their surroundings. These substances can be molecules that can regulate the immune cells. These substances can be growth factors, extracellular matrix proteins, and enzymes that degrade proteins. And the mixture of these substances can produce very different effect in a tissue microenvironment. So many studies have reported that the accumulation of senescent cells in aging human and contribute to the development of cardiovascular and neurodegenerative diseases, osteoarthritis and others. And this is because they produce pro-inflammatory molecules, reactive oxygen species and extracellular matrix degrading enzymes that can damage the neighboring cells and contribute to tissue dysfunction. Hence, senescent cells traditionally are viewed as harmful cells and should be wiped out to prevent disease development. Mm-hmm. However, senescence has several important beneficial roles, okay, such as number one, wound healing. All right, senescence can promote tissue repair and regeneration by secreting the growth factors and extracellular matrix components. It can also recruit immune cells to the site of injury to remove the damaged cells and to allow healing, right? And then number two, they have tumor suppression roles, right? Wow. As mentioned earlier, in a cell's life cycle, it undergoes QC checks, right? So during the cell cycle checkpoint, cells carrying irreparable DNA damages are exited from the cell cycle, and they are asked to become senescent. So senescence is a way of a cell to prevent growth of potentially cancerous cells by stopping their division, right? And also by promoting their elimination by the immune system. Okay. However, although they are tumors, suppressors, senescent cells can also produce inflammatory molecules that create a chronic inflammation environment and this chronic inflammation actually favors the growth of cancer cells and contribute to tumor progression.
Oh, that's very strange. You can both suppress and contribute.
It really depends on the mixture that you have there, the substances that they produce, and the level. All right, and then the third role, immune response. So substances produced by senescent cells can activate the immune system. So they can attract immune cells to the injured site and promote the clearance of the damaged cells or even the cancer cells. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like some kind of tumor immunosurveillance process. And number four, senescent cells can help maintain a balanced state of tissue environment by regulating the turnover of cells and preventing the accumulation of dysfunctional cell. All right, and lastly, embryonic development. Developmental senescence are seen in embryos of human, mouse, zebrafish, chicken, frog, and naked mole rat. So they appear and then they disappear at specific time points as the embryos develop. And this is because they are fine-tuning cell differentiation and tissue patterning. So once they have done their job, they are removed from the site and helps the tissue to mature and develop properly.
That's interesting that for, you know, what you said about how for very long we thought they only had a negative impact, and then now suddenly we found that they have some positive impact as well. I guess if what we knew first was that it had a negative impact, does that mean that we've been trying to figure out ways to remove them from the body?
Yeah, so I think some of those studies have come out from in relation to the brain, looking at aged mice and removing these senescent cells. So first of all, I think that these senescent cells, that it's also technically challenging to identify them. I think that's probably also why it's something that seems to be fairly new, right? Because before this, when you looked at cells in a dish, for example, there was no way to differentiate which ones were still alive and dividing and which ones had entered senescence. So it was only once the scientists had figured out a way to sort of really be able to label them, that's when then we were able to study them better. So because of that kind of advancement in the labeling technology, then when the scientists went back and looked at aging mice, then they could sort of pinpoint a little bit more carefully, right, where these senescent cells were, and could remove them selectively, right? Because you know, there are a whole range of chemicals that you can give to, you know, a brain that would kind of wipe out a whole mass of cells, but you actually want to just specifically remove the senescent cells. So by being able to do this, they found that removing these senescent cells in the aged mice, they found that the mice actually sort of more slowly aged, and also that they seem to sort of maintain their cognitive ability a little bit longer. And the conclusion that they made at that point was that, you know, if you remove something and something looks like it's getting better, that thing that you removed must have been harmful. But that might not be the whole story. You know, I think as we've heard Dr. Wong explain, actually these senescent cells, they release all sorts of things depending on different, you know, conditions. So that story may not have been fully representative. So more recently, they have looked at, I have to say, not specifically at the brain, but in other tissues and younger tissues. And they've actually found that, you know, these senescent cells are actually releasing chemicals that might be helpful, just like Dr. Wong said, you know, and it actually helps to repair any damage in any surrounding cells. So that's where, you know, you have this sort of, you know, the scary zombie cells, but actually the friendly neighborhood zombies, you know, that are kind of like helping you out. So, and it's also because of, and the trick is understanding when do they become one and the other, and then under what condition. And it may also be different in different tissues, you know, because different tissues release different chemicals and the cells within that tissue react differently as well.
From what I understand, you know, from the research on this and what we were discussing, I guess, before we started the show, was that there have been ongoing therapies based on what we previously understood about these senescent cells, which was that, like what you said, Dr. Zina, that they were bad, right? If we remove them, they improve things. But now if we have also studies saying that they by leaving them in, they also improve things. What does that mean for, I guess, previous therapies that have, you know, been going on?
I think in terms of brain-related aging diseases, if we haven't got a clear picture as to what the role of these senescent cells in the brain, if you're developing drugs to target, reducing certain levels of chemicals in the brain, that might inadvertently affect these senescent cells, which may actually be trying to make the situation better, right?
I think it also helps to find out whether, you know, if you're targeting a tissue that is full of senescent cells. I mean, in aging tissue, you know, don't target young tissues. So the idea here is that you design drugs that are specific for senescent cells, and in the case of brain, you design drugs that are targeting, specifically target the senescent glial cells or astrocytes, not the neuronal cells. So you can do that. We have been, I've seen reports that, you know, they can design drugs and they take a probe, that the probe will recognize only cells that are producing a high level of a marker of senescent cells. Mm-hmm. So what we can do in the future is, can we like add on another probe that says, just go for the glial cells, the senescent glial cells. Yeah, so that's possible.
Mm-hmm. So right now, do we have any therapies that are targeting senescent cells, or are those is everything still under research?
There are several clinical trials, but usually these are the drugs that already used before, you know, for cancer. Mm. All right, so they are now using these drugs to see if you target, a pulmonary dysfunction in patients. Mm. Right, can you improve the function of this patient? And they showed that yes, it can improve the function of in this patient, improve the frailty of this patient. However, there are also adverse effects connected to the drugs that are under trials, you know, because this this one of these drugs is an anti-cancer drug, so it's known to also target the white blood cells.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's very active. This is a very active area of research where we are looking for more specific compounds. Right, compounds that don't target certain cells, the healthy cells, compounds that only target the senescent cells.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm.
And just to add on as well, that actually we also don't sort of understand the behavior of these senescent cells, because there was also a recent study that showed that these cells that acquire this sort of zombie-like property, they don't actually die when other cells do. So, for example, you assume that when someone dies, then all the cells in the brain will die, right?
Mm-hmm.
But some scientists, they found that up to 24 hours, right, that this group, a specific group of zombie cells, were actually still active. And in particular, they found that it was these glial cells, and they hypothesized that these cells are a little bit confused. They're sort of they know that there's something going on. Like, you know, they can detect that there's death happening, and they're actually trying to help the situation. So they then ramp up their their role in terms of repair and everything. But then eventually, then they will stop working. So in that sense, that if you think about when what we understand for neurodegenerative diseases is a lot of our understanding has come from postmortem tissues.
Mm.
And these postmortem tissues are typically sort of taken, you know, maybe 12 hours perhaps after death. And actually at that stage, you think that that's it. You've got that snapshot, you know, because all the cells are dead. You have a specific time point of death.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, there's still activity going on.
In the postmortem
brain? In the postmortem brain by these cells, right? And so actually a postmortem tissue is not giving an accurate representation actually of what is actually happening even post-death. And that's something that, you know, people are trying to improve the method in which we can collect postmortem tissue so that we can get a better snapshot of, you know, the pathology that's actually happening.
Mm. Is that also, I guess, then why a lot of this research are also happening in animals like mice? Because we can study them in the sense that we can't do that with
that's
humans.
Right. Yeah, so you can get, whole brain tissue from live mice, which, of course, you can't get from humans.
Mm.
Yeah.
You can also do genetic modification on mice. You can't do that on humans.
Yeah. That's right. So you could make a mouse that would have more senescent cells, for example.
Yes.
You know, like, and then you can kind of really push the system all the way and see what effect that would have.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, if we have right now, based on what we know, right, we have one set of studies that say that they have positive impact, another set of studies that say that, well, they have negative impact. How do we move forward from here then? You know, how do we move forward with these two different results in terms of future research, especially in looking at neurodegenerative diseases or even cancers?
Mm-hmm. So until today, we know that the senescent cells, they secrete a mixture of substances. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but until today, scientists are unable to define, you know, this senescent cell type, which senescent cell type produce which kind of substances that are harmful or beneficial.
Mm.
So I think future research or ongoing research should be targeted towards this area, you know, which kind of substances they specifically they produce. And then you can create drugs, you know, not necessarily drugs that can kill them, but drugs that can stop them from producing all these harmful substances. All right, that's one way to go. Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other way is that I also always ask this myself, you know, it's a chicken and egg thing. These senescent cells, are they the actual culprit or they are just responding to the environment?
We don't know.
We don't know. Mm. We don't know. Yeah. So. Yeah. How do you do this?
More research.
More research, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But why look into senescent cells, right? I mean, if do the sort of the benefits and the harms, don't they eventually cancel each other out?
Well, I mean, I suppose, it's that we don't know whether or not there's an equal number of, you know, helpful and unhelpful in any tissue. And if we understood that more, and if we understood the chemicals, you know, that they're releasing, then you know, we can target that better. You know, so it would be, for example, just understanding the whole complexity of what is happening in say neurodegeneration, so that you know better drugs can be developed. You know, I think a lot of the time, you know, for neurodegenerative diseases, you know, we have a limited option of drugs that we can give or you know, therapies that we can give. So by understanding these pathways that are all involved, you know, so maybe you can sort of, you know, use one to target one step, and then if it still progresses, then you have another target, you know, so it's sort of being able to systematically work out potential therapies.
Mm. I guess, Dr. Azlina, from what you've seen and read, what are the challenges that you've seen in terms of researching senescent cells?
I think one is that we have to, you know, rely on other animal models.
Mm.
And then one assumption is that we like, well, what's happening in the mouse or in the rat is happening in the human brain. May not necessarily be so.
But it's the closest one that
we get. But it's the closest, yeah. I mean, it will give us a lot of clues, definitely. But then how we would translate that into human would be perhaps if we know what are the chemicals that are being released, then maybe we could look at them in, say, you know, the cerebral spinal fluid, you know, as a biomarker, so that we can then sort of detect what is the level of senescence that's happening in your brain, right? And then that then would be helpful for clinicians to decide what is the state of the brain. Because at the moment, you know, you rely on MRI, for example, but the MRI may be too much of a zoomed out snapshot. But if we include the MRI results as well as other biomarkers that will tell you the actual state, unhealthy, healthy, what is the threshold, then that will be really very helpful, I think, in deciding, number one, actually, what is the stage of disease that the person is in, and even theoretically, if you can actually work out, you know, as the disease progresses, you know, you have this chemical suddenly appearing, this chemical suddenly appearing, and then, of course, ideally, then having, you know, a therapy that can intervene at those stages. So that's still, you know, a long way off, I think, particularly in the human brain anyway. But I think in other tissues, they have probably, because other tissues are much more accessible, you know, so it's probably easier to, a little bit easier, I would imagine, to do
for
research.
For example, the skin is probably easier. Mm-hmm. But we still don't have this, you know, way to really image the senescent cells in a human body.
Mm.
You know, so when you do a clinical trial on this senescent targeting drug, how do you really know that you are actually killing the senescent cell, you know? So we don't have this ability to really image senescent cells, and we don't even have markers, you know, biomarkers, soluble markers in the blood, the blood markers, for example. You know, we have blood markers for cancers, right? So the substances that we talk about, right, they are also produced, or they are also increased in obese people. They also increase in diabetic people and in cancer patient as well. So it's really, really hard to define, you know, which one is a senescent blood marker. So the challenge is that if we can find all this, I think it's very easy to just do human trial using these drugs.
I mean, this is an area of research that you're familiar in, familiar with, Dr. Wong. What do you want to see this move forward in? You know, what gets you excited about this?
Honestly, I'm actually looking for such compounds, such drug, right? So my students, we have been testing some synthetic molecules, right? Where we work with the scientists from the chemistry department. So even in my own screening project, I can tell, you know, there's certain compounds that would just target specific cells. Like, for example, I have one compound that will target the blood vessel cells, right? And then there's, but it doesn't harm the skin connective tissue. So to me, this is good news. I mean, if we can continue to, you know, look for a new molecules, you know, synthesized molecules that are more specific. Yeah, so that is something that I hope to achieve in the near future. And also, with any new drugs, definitely we need to work on the dosage regimen. Right. So for cancer patients now, they have a certain time that they have to go and receive the anti-cancer drugs. Right. So can we do the same for all these anti-senescence drug? Right. So the studies that we've been through, they do 2 weeks intermittent dosing. Right. Can we do that in human? Is it going to be to reduce the side effects, for example? Yeah, so these are all very interesting stuff for me as a pharmacologist to look into.
I mean, we're talking about senescence and these cells sort of, and these cells, the role of them in aging diseases. Do you think that one day people are going to find the key to immortality, Dr. Hasina?
Wow, oh, that's a tough one.
Is that too far a goal for
us? Is that what you're hoping?
At?
I'll ask the question back to you.
I mean, actually, to be fair, a lot of people might question a longer lifespan considering that, you know, the world is slowly being destroyed bit by bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think physiologically, there's also probably a reason why these cells go into senescence, because perhaps, you know, if you think of, you know, tissue volume, right? Like if you don't, I mean, death is actually a, cell death is actually a natural process that happens in development. You actually, initially in development, you produce more cells than you need. And then through competition, because not enough nutrients, so certain cells will live. And then that kind of like refines and tunes, you know, the network, particularly in the brain and in the nervous system. So if you have these cells that are sort of, you know, still there, but then they kind of don't go quiet, there may be like too much noise happening, right? So that physiologically, there must be a reason that we haven't quite uncovered yet. And, you know, whether or not that will lead to immortality, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that.
For me, rather than aiming immortality, I would rather aim for healthy aging. Yeah, healthy aging is the key word nowadays. So we want to go through normal kind of aging, but minus the diseases. So you reduce the healthcare costs. You reduce government's, you know, costs, social economic burden for the government.
Yep.
So how do you practice healthy aging? Increase physical activity, eat healthy food, you know, healthy diet.
And part of all that is to continue research into the human body.
Yeah, that's right.
And on that note, thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to neurogeneticist Dr. Hasina Ahmad Anwar for her Brainwaves series, and we've been joined by pharmacologist Professor Dr. Wong Pui Fong on today's show. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.